gets a touchdown from the Hamilton Ticats, their eighth of the year.
Kolaris, little screen here. It's officially over.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Well, I got to give credit where credit's due, Mike. You were right. That was quite the interesting Grey Cup, and it was close. It came down to the end. I thought it would be a blowout and had no interest in watching it. You told me, watch, watch, watch. It's going to be a close game, and you were right.
Yeah, it kind of looked like it would be a blowout for Ottawa at the start. You know, they came out with two straight touchdowns. Dropped 13-0 because they missed the extra point. But, yeah, it turned out to be a pretty good game, a pretty interesting game. Not an all-time classic or anything like that, but very very interesting. And, you know, it kept me entertained the whole time. So it came down right to the end, and a pretty good Grey Cup in my books.
Yeah, for those out there interested, I did watch, I would say, 99% of the game. I was clicking back and forth at the beginning because my San Francisco 49ers were actually in a competitive football game for once, and I wanted to see if they could actually pull out the win. They did not. So I missed a little bit of the first quarter. The only major thing I think I missed was the Henry Burris interception. And then once the Niners game ended, it was all Grey Cup. You kind of nailed it when you said I would find a way to get into the game, and it absolutely was wanting to see Henry Burris get slapped around. You were on fire last week with your predictions.
Yeah, he did get slapped around quite a bit. You know, he started off hot. The Edmonton's defense looked kind of bad at the start. You know, they were really picking apart their defense. But after a while, you know, the Red Blacks really slowed down on offense. Henry Burris couldn't get a rhythm going. And he got a lot of pressure on him. He got sacked a couple times. And the offense did not look good after, pretty much after the first two drives. They had spurts of here and there. I mean, and they led most of the game, probably about 45 minutes, 50 minutes of the game. So they had lead most of the game, but after those first couple drives, their offense kind of fell off a cliff.
Yeah, it just seemed to me like Edmonton, I don't want to say they were maybe nervous or what it was, but yeah, they didn't start very well. They allowed Ottawa to drive down right away, and it could have ended differently. The very first pass Burst throws was nearly intercepted, and if Mwamba intercepts that, he's going to the house, and this is maybe a very different football game. But Ottawa rebounded from that. They went down and scored. Then they kick off, and Lawrence fumbles on the kickoff. Ottawa scores again. It was looking like Ottawa was going to run away with this, and then Edmonton just started chipping away. They get the big turnover that I didn't see. I'm assuming Burst threw the pick, and then I believe Edmonton went down and scored, did they not?
Either scored 7 or 3. I'm not sure exactly which.
I think it was I think it was 13-3, and then I'm pretty sure Edmonton scored the touchdown. The Adarius Bowman touchdown, I think, was what. It's a little fuzzy, but I'm pretty sure that's what happened. And then Edmonton they sort of did what they do. They clamped down on defense, and they did just enough on offense to win that game. There's not really much that can be said. Let's call a spade a spade. Edmonton is deserving of winning this Grey Cup. They, from Labor Day on, were the best team I have seen in quite some time. They went 10-0 after losing on Labor Day to Calgary. This is as deserving a Grey Cup champion as I think we have ever seen.
Yeah, they really turned it on in the second half of the season after Riley came back. And like I said last week, it took a while for Riley to get back into rhythm, but once he did, he looked like one of the best quarterbacks in the CFL. You know, in that Grey Cup game, you could really see the way he was tossing the ball. He really had a tight spirals on the ball in that game. He just looked really sharp for most of the game. And, you know, going forward, he has to be getting a really nice raise, and he might be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You might have to put him at the, you know, that elite status, top three best quarterbacks in the league now.
Do you think maybe with the Grey Cup win, we're going to see that TSN top 50? Do you think maybe this is the guy that ends up being the number one, considered the number one player in the league?
Well, it's a possibility, because that's what we saw this year with Bo Levi Mitchell. So, you know, I don't think he is the top player in the league. He needs to be more consistent. You know, he looked really bad earlier in the season, and yes, he turned it on near the end, and yes, he's a Grey Cup champion, but to be number one, the best player in the league, we're going to have to see another, like, full season from him doing what he did at the end of the season and in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think he's got the potential to be the best player in the league, and don't get me wrong, he played a great Grey Cup. He was pretty, like, he didn't make a lot of bad throws. He didn't make a lot of poor decisions. He ran at the end of the game with those read option plays that sealed the game for them. It was maybe one of his best performances, and to do it on the big stage, I think it gives him a little bit of a bump. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. He showed his worth in that Grey Cup game. So there's I've been a fan of Riley for a long time. He gets some slack here in Edmonton, but I think that he has won over a lot of Eskimos fans with his performance on Sunday.
This wasn't a one-team game. Ottawa came out and played a whale of a ball game too. And the guy that stood out for me was William Powell, the running back for Ottawa. I thought that he played magnificently. He seems to be what everyone wanted Siobhan Walker to be. He's quick, but he's also not afraid to take it in between the tackles. He really impressed me, and I know Jeremiah Johnson is still in Ottawa, and he was really good before he got hurt, but William Powell looks like he could be a star in this league.
Yeah, hidden gem. You know, he's sitting behind Siobhan Walker and Jeremiah Johnson at the start of the season, and then all of a sudden he's starting in the Grey Cup game, and he had a great performance, maybe, you know, one of the best performances of the game. You know, if Ottawa wins that game, he might be the MVP of the game, so I think they might have a pretty good 1-2 punch with Jeremiah Johnson and Powell going forward, or maybe they dump Johnson and keep Powell, because you're right, he looked really good. He, like you said, he, you know, he kind of looks like Siobhan Walker, but better. You know, he really hits the hole between the tackles and makes yards when, you know, Siobhan Walker, he's an explosive player and he can make those, you know, 50, 60 yard rushes occasionally, but he just didn't have a very good average. You know, he didn't get the 5-6 yards when he needed it. So William Powell seems to be able to do that, and maybe he's a starting running back next year for the Red Blacks.
There was also a bit of controversy in this game. The winning score was set up by a reviewed pass interference call. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was sitting and watching live and I saw the play happen, I said, where's the flag? That should have been pass interference. Then they showed the replay in slow motion, and it was very obviously pass interference. But it seemed to ruffle the feathers of a certain Red Blacks DB by the name of Javon Johnson, who took to Twitter after the game and kind of complained about PI being a reviewable play. And I kind of understand where he's coming from, because I was never the biggest fan of reviewing pass interference. However, it's been the rule now for 2 seasons. We're used to it, and they got the call right. And at the end of the day, I think that's more important than anything else, getting the call right. I'm not really sure what leg Johnson has to stand on. And I've seen some people go after him about it and say, if the roles were reversed and the call was on an Ottawa receiver, you'd be saying that you're glad it was reviewed, blah, 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 blah. But it did seem to spark a little bit of a debate about whether pass interference should continue to be reviewable. Do you stand on the side of Johnson, or are you saying, no, keep it reviewable?
I'm saying keep it reviewable. You know, sometimes it's really hard to tell if it's pass interference. You know, it's a judgment call type thing, and reviewing it sometimes doesn't solve the situation. But in this case, it was clearly pass interference, especially when you slowed it down. He was clearly there before the ball got there. It was textbook pass interference. So, you know, they got it right. It was a huge play in the game, but it should have been called in the first place. So I don't have a problem with them reviewing it. And, you know, Chris Jones took a long time to decide on if he was going to throw that yellow flag. And I'm sure he's glad he did now, because it was a huge play in the game. So I don't have a problem with it. They got it right, and that's all that matters to me.
Yeah, Kenny Stafford was pleading with him to throw the flag. And then they take that time out and they show Jones on the sidelines, and he looked kind of ticked off. And the commentators were saying it was because Stafford was late getting back to the huddle and they were going to take a time count violation. But Stafford was right. He was wise to get up to Jones and be like, throw that bloody flag, because if they don't get that, who knows how this game turns out. That was a big play, and the Eskimos ended up scoring what ended up being the game's winning point. So very, very smart on Stafford's part.
Yeah, and you know, it was questionable. Riley throws that pass to Kuhorn in the end zone, and, you know, his feet are in, but the ball was maybe not in. And, you know, it looked like the ball wasn't in, but then I'm seeing some replays on Twitter that show that the ball might have been in. But it was a gutsy call to go for it on 3rd and 1 from the 1 yard line. And, you know, they could have been up. They could have put themselves up by 1 with a field goal, but they decided to go for the touchdown. And, you know, it paid off, but it was a risky move at the time.
Well, that's just it. When things like that happen, it's boom or bust. If it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, you're a fool. Although in that situation, Ottawa would have been set up on their 1 yard line. You know they would have done something where they would have gone deep. They did that earlier in the game, I believe, to Maurice Price, and they ended up getting a pass interference call out of it. And they did it to Hamilton 2 weeks ago. And they did it to Hamilton a couple weeks before that, even in the final regular season game where they threw up a bomb from like the inside their five. So you know what play they were going to run if they got stuffed there, and Edmonton could have forced a punt, it may be a safety, and who knows. But yeah, you're right. Definitely a gutsy call by Jones. What do you think of all these rumors now that Chris Jones might be headed to Saskatchewan?
It's very interesting. You wouldn't think that he would, you know, he just won a Grey Cup with the Eskimos. He's a pretty popular guy here in Edmonton, but money talks. I mean, if the Riders and the position that they might be offering GM and head coach, you know, he didn't really deny it when he was asked the question. It's very interesting. I'm sure that Edmonton fans will have a huge hate on for Saskatchewan if they nab their Grey Cup head coach.
Yeah, I think Jones would become public enemy number one in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Almost immediately. It's strange. I understand that Jones, we've seen in the past, he's not exactly one to honor contracts. If we remember how he went to Toronto in 2012 and the Argos got fined for tampering and it was like a slap on the wrist. But you're right. With the dual roles and the extra money that would come with that, it would be hard for Jones to pass up. But on the other hand, he's built Edmonton into a perennial contender. He's been there 2 years. They've been to the West Final, the Grey Cup, and they've won a Grey Cup. If I was Chris Jones, the money would have to be significant, like hundreds of thousands of dollars more than Edmonton would be willing to give me. Because Edmonton's going to sign him to a contract extension if they can, you know what I'm saying? He's not going to be making league coach minimum money or whatever it is that he was making before. He's going to get a pay raise because this team is built to compete now for two or three more years. So it's that he's got to weigh that, like, do I stay in Edmonton and continue to be on a team to coach a team that is able to compete for championships, or does he have an ego on him and decide I want to go to Saskatchewan and take what was a dumpster fire of a team in 2015 and build them back up and try to get them to the heights that they had seen recently with multiple Grey Cup appearances and a couple of championships. Because when he took over Edmonton, they were coming off a 4-14 season, but everyone thought that Edmonton was a lot better than their record showed, and they just needed a few pieces, and Jones get in there, gets those pieces, and we've seen the fruits of that labor. Do you think he might be interested in doing the same sort of thing in Saskatchewan?
Yeah, I think he might. I've heard, I can't remember where I saw this, it was on Twitter or something, and it might have been a reporter that said that him and Ed Hervey aren't exactly best friends, so maybe there's some animosity there, and he wants to get at Edmonton because he doesn't really like the GM. I don't know. I don't know how truthful that is, but yeah, I'm sure there's a pull to go to Saskatchewan because I'm sure he wants to pick his own players. You know, lots of head coaches want to be the dual role, the GM and the head coach, like Ken Austin is in Hamilton, you know, have all that power. So, you know, if he can get both roles and the money's better, I could see him going to Saskatchewan. If he's happy with the situation at Edmonton, then maybe he stays here. Maybe he wants to build a dynasty type thing. But I could see it going either way. I can see the reasons to go to Saskatchewan, and I can see reasons to stay at Edmonton with a championship caliber team.
So if he does decide to leave, let's work on the assumption that he says, yeah, I'm going to Saskatchewan. They're offering me way more money than I can turn down. And a much bigger role in, like you said, he gets to pick his own players. He'd be the GM head coach. That leaves Edmonton open. The Grey Cup champions would be able to pick whomever they wanted for their head coach. And I think this would be the first time a team after a Grey Cup win would be going after a head coach since Ken Austin left Saskatchewan after they won in 07?
Yeah, I think you'd be right in that assumption.
So the Grey Cup champions could be, hey, we need a guy to come in here and keep this thing going. Any ideas who you think might be interested in that job?
Well, I think a lot of people would be interested. It's hard to think off the top of my head who would be out there, you know, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators that maybe, you know, Steinhauer and Hamilton, you know, there's been rumors about him getting head coaching opportunity. He's a defensive guy, just like Chris Jones. Noel Thorpe in Montreal, you know, that Jim Popp's coming back as a head coach / GM. So he's been long time rumored to have interest and getting interest for a head coaching position. Yeah, I'm sure, like, there's obviously that's a really good opportunity to get, you know, coaching the Grey Cup championship team. They just came off the championship. So, yeah, I'm not those are just a couple of guys that popped in my head right away. But who do you got as head coach there if Chris Jones leaves?
Well, three names that I sort of think of are Paul Appelese. I think he's an obvious candidate to get a head coaching job again somewhere. I've heard he is in the conversation in Saskatchewan. Mm-hmm. But if Jones goes there, obviously he's not going to be head coach in Saskatchewan. And I've heard that maybe Winnipeg would want to bring him back, but as the offensive coordinator. But if Edmonton opens up, Lapolis is a really good offensive guy. And to bring him in with the guys they have on that offense, and then maybe he lures his TSN compadre, Mike Benavides, into Edmonton as well. And Benavides becomes the defensive coordinator there. I've also heard Benavides might become the defensive coordinator in Toronto. He's a Toronto guy, and Casey Crehan's not going to be retained for obvious reasons. I believe way back when he was hired, we had a huge laugh at at Toronto's expense, and their defense was decent, but they gave up a ton of points this year. And one name I think maybe people should consider, although if I'm being perfectly honest, I think it's way too soon. What about Jason Moss? Look what he did with that Red Blacks offense this year. And I know he's got a few years coaching experience, but only one at the coordinator level. But Jason Moss played in Edmonton. The fans there still hold him in high regard. Got them to a Grey Cup 1 year when Ricky Ray was hurt. Ray came in. I believe they won the Grey Cup. I think it was actually the last Grey Cup they won. I think Moss won the West Final for Edmonton.
Yeah, and then I remember,
Ray played in the Grey Cup.
I remember 1 year. I think Ricky Ray was healthy. I think he got pulled in both the semifinal and the West Final. And Jason Moss came in and won both those games. And then Ray played the whole Grey Cup and won the Grey Cup, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. I just remember at one point, Moss came in a West Final and got them to a Grey Cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then Ray played the Grey Cup and they won. So I'm pretty sure that was 2005. Now, if you're saying he got pulled, maybe your memory's better than mine. I thought he got hurt because why else would you pull Ricky Ray? But I guess that was when Ricky Ray was still pretty young in his career, and pulling him is not exactly a crazy thing to do. But maybe he's someone that they look at. Saskatchewan hired Corey Chamberlain as their head coach after 1 year of coordinator experience. And for a little while it worked out. I mean, they won a Grey Cup, for crying out loud. So I don't know. Maybe Jason Moss could defect from Ottawa to Edmonton. And that, to me, would be a huge blow to the Red Blacks if they lost Moss.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to him for how the Red Blacks offense played this year. I mean, he really did a really great job. So, yeah, he could do a lot of things with this Edmonton offense. You know, I don't think it's reached its full potential yet. I think they can be a lot better with the talent that they have on that team. So, yeah, maybe Jason Moss, an offensive mind, is a little change of pace if Chris Jones leaves and they really get that offense cooking with that great defense. So, yeah, I could see that happening as well.
All right, well, that's pretty much all I have to say about the Grey Cup. I just can't believe the season's already over.
Yeah, I know it flew by. It seems like it always does, but especially this season, it just, you know, it feels like we just started week one not too long ago, and now it's all done. But the offseason is getting more interesting and interesting every year, it seems. So, yeah, it sucks that we don't have three-down football for a while, but the offseason is a very interesting time, so... We have that to look forward to, all the signings, and see what happens in the upcoming months.
Well, yeah, there's going to be a ton of coaching moves, I think, in December. And, yeah, like you said, free agency, and then the draft. It's going to be June again before we realize it, and we're all going to be happy to see the game being played again. So I think this was a pretty good season for the league. I think quarterback injuries really sort of hurt the on-field product a little bit, but we saw a resurgent team in Ottawa. That's a great story. Edmonton getting back to the mountaintop after a 10-year absence. That's a good story. Calgary's still in the mix. Hamilton's still in the mix. Toronto's about to move into a new stadium. It's going to be an exciting offseason.
This is kind of throwing it at you on the fly here, but what do you think of Jeffrey Orridge's job, like the way he's performed in his first season as a CFL commissioner?
Well, it's funny you bring that up because I wanted to talk about his State of the League address, which – to me was completely underwhelming. He didn't really do anything. He was kind of invisible. I know he's not Mark Cohan, and maybe no one ever will be, but I think the CFL needs a much more visible face as commissioner than Orridge put out there this year, because there was a lot of things that happened. Bad refereeing that we saw, the lack of a drug testing policy, declining ratings, declining attendance. Like here in Hamilton, attendance was up massively. They sold out they sold above capacity for every single game they had at Tim Hortons Field. So it's funny that Hamilton's like the one non-problem area when it used to be Toronto and Southern Ontario that used to be an issue. But the Argos have a new home. They have a new ownership. So they're really not that much of a problem anymore either. But I don't want to blast the guy, but I was not impressed with his job since he became commissioner.
Yeah, he caught a lot of heat after that State of the League address from some of the media that covered it. So, yeah, I've been seeing some stuff that he's kind of, you know, he's not out there as much as Cohan was. You don't see him as much. Some reports say he might be overwhelmed with the job. You know, he did, right off the bat, you know, he got the ball rolling in Toronto. Like, he got them into BMO and new ownership, and that was a great thing. I think that, you know, you talk about the ratings. I think that last year really hurt the CFL with, you know, all the flags and, you know, not a great product on the field.
A lot of low-scoring games.
Yeah, a lot of low-scoring games, not as much offense, you know, that traditional CFL football where it's, you know, high-scoring, lots of offense. And, yeah, I think they lost some fans last year and they didn't get them back this year. And maybe they came back at the start and then saw all the flags that were happening and decided to turn off their TVs. But, you know, I think there's some bright spots. Like you said, there's Hamilton selling out. Ottawa's doing great. You know, Saskatchewan's always going to be good. Edmonton's good. I think Calgary's good. Winnipeg, attendance was down, but I just think that's because of the bad team. Like, I think the Winnipeg fans are great, and they'll come back and they'll support a team that is a contender. BC has been down. I think that's part of the ownership group. I keep hearing that Braley has many offers on the table. Like, sell the damn team. And, you know, we see what happened in Toronto when he owned the team. And I'm not here to blast Braley. I think he's done a lot of great things for the CFL. He's maybe even saved it on a couple occasions. But I think his time is up as an owner of a CFL teams. And I think it's time for new blood in BC, just like it was time for new blood in Toronto. So BC's a little bit troubling right now. And obviously, Toronto's, as usual, it's a tough sell for CFL football in Toronto, but hopefully that changes next year. So I think there's a lot of bright spots in the league. I think, you know, if you look at the demographics, I think that there's a lot of young fans coming out to, you know, you probably see it in Hamilton. I'm sure there's a lot of young fans coming out to Hamilton, and same with Ottawa. So those are two teams in Ontario that for the longest time had problems and look pretty strong right now. So, yeah, there's some bad stuff. The CFL has some problems, but I think there's some positive stuff as well.
Yeah, I don't want to be too negative, but we're going to segue into something that I did not like whatsoever, and that was the new logo.
Mm.
They changed the logo, and it's just too sterile for me. You wouldn't know to look at that logo that it was the logo for the Canadian Football League. Yeah. It could be the logo for a shoe company or a record label. Like, there's the hint of the laces at the top of the logo. There's, like, a, 30% piece of a maple leaf at the bottom. And then it's gray and black. When I first saw it, I was really, really disappointed with the change.
Yeah, I'm not that impressed either. It's really bland. It's just, you know, I didn't have a problem with the older logo, the one that we had a couple of weeks ago. I thought that was fine. I didn't think we needed a change, but I guess they're rebranding. You know, they're going to have new uniforms again with Reebok going out and Adidas coming in to do the uniforms. So I don't know. I don't really like it, but I just don't like it. And it's not a big issue for me, but I don't see why they had to make a change.
No, it's not a big issue either. It's one of those things where they unveil it, we bitch and moan about it for a couple of weeks, and then we just deal with it. It's kind of like how when Ottawa announced that they were going to be the Red Blacks, and everyone's like, that's the stupidest name they could have possibly picked. And it's still a really dumb name, but we've gotten used to it, and now it's a non-issue. I feel the same way with the logo. What do you think of the new campaign, this What We're Made Of thing?
No, I think it's the videos are put together really well. You know, that's what Jeffrey Orge's thing is, I guess, to, you know, try to promote to younger people, you know, the internet stuff and, you know, try to get viral videos going. I think it's put together really well, and I don't have a problem with it. I hope it appeals to a younger demographic, because that's what we keep hearing, you know, for years and years. The CFL fan is old and all that stuff. But, yeah, I think it's okay. I don't think it's, like, spectacular, but I don't have a problem with it.
I'm never really a fan of these hashtag slogans. Like, you get out there, and if you want to tag your tweets with hashtag, what is it, WWMO is now the thing. I always kind of find them a little silly. The Blue Jays have had a couple, I think, really bad ones. Last year or the year before, it was like, if you want to talk with other Blue Jay fans, you would hashtag your tweets, love this team.
Mm-hmm.
It's very generic, you know what I mean? Like, that could be that could mean anything. And then they went to Come Together, which, again, generic, but I guess, you know, that works in the TO of Toronto, so it works a little bit. I'm just not a fan of these things in general. The This Is Our League slogan is now gone. Apparently, I'm not sure if it was the commissioner himself or some sort of group he put together felt that that was too exclusive, and they wanted a slogan that was more inclusive, and they figured this What We're Made Of one would be more inclusive. The video that accompanied it was pretty cool, and like you said, they're trying to reach a younger demographic. Maybe I'm getting old and I just don't understand this need for change all the time, but it seems like out of all the sports leagues out there, the CFL likes to make changes just for the sake of making changes. And to me, this new logo and this new slogan just falls in line more with that.
Yeah, I think they should go old school and bring back Radically Canadian. What do you think about that?
Hey, that was a great slogan.
Yeah. And Our Balls Are Bigger t-shirts, you know?
Yeah, I had an uncle who had one of those, and every time he would wear it out and about, there would always be someone who would mention, well, it was just for that one year. After that, the balls in the NFL, and it's like, yeah, okay, but it's a joke. It's meant to be funny,
yeah.
And we're supposed to laugh at that.
Yeah, I had that t-shirt too. So.
Did you?
Yeah.
Look, we got to just accept it and move on, and as long as they don't try to force things, like, if I've already talked about it on Twitter, so if anyone's listening doesn't tweet, but if you're out there using the Is It June Yet hashtag already, you get 3 strikes, and then I'm finding a way to get you out of my social media presence. I hate that. If you want to bring it about when the schedule comes out in February and you're like, oh, man.
Is the schedule yet?
Of course.
No, that's funny thing on Twitter that happens every year. People asking when the schedule is going to be released.
Yeah, I've seen it too. But like, the season just ended. There's still tons of stuff to do in the off season. We've already discussed some of it. Let's not wish away 6 months of our lives, because believe me, when you get older, you're going to wish you had those 6 months back. I can't stand these hashtag movements that the CFL comes up. Maybe this is just me being an old curmudgeon, but man, they annoy the piss out of me sometimes.
I guess that's how you market these days. It's all on social media. That's where all the youngins are.
All right, so something else that kind of annoyed me was a piece in the Ottawa Citizen that essentially said that the Eskimos should change their name because it's offensive. They're, I guess, piggybacking on the Redskins, Washington Redskins controversy in the U.S., in the NFL, and saying that the Eskimos is offensive to Inuits. I don't know if it is or it isn't, to be perfectly honest. I don't know very many Inuit people, so I'm not sure if this is an offensive term. But a part of the piece was talking about how they use an Inuit as their mascot, but the Edmonton mascots are a polar bear and an anthropomorphic football. So it's really they just use Eskimos as the name, but there's no Inuit person out there in a parka pretending to build an igloo. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to be offensive here. I'm just saying, like, they don't really play up the Eskimos angle. They more play up the northern angle, if that makes sense.
Like you, I'm not native. I don't know if Eskimos is an offensive word, so I can't really talk much on the subject if it's offensive or not. I know that, you know, Redskins is a pretty offensive word. So I could see the push to get rid of that team name. I can't really see the push to get rid of the Eskimos. You know, like you said, the mascots are Nanook and Punter, and they're not, you know, natives. You know, they're just, you know, like you said, they're a football and a polar bear. So that's not offensive. I just don't see where this is coming from. Maybe they're trying to grab some attention because the Eskimos were in the Grey Cup, you know, just kind of came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, they need to change their name. So, you know, I don't see the problem with it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just don't see it. But, I think they should keep their name. And they've had the name since 1948, I think it is. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
I would love for someone, anyone out there, to maybe give us the opposing point of view. Maybe there is something inherently offensive about the name Eskimos. And I know we don't use it to describe those people anymore, but I'll plead ignorance on this. I'm not entirely sure why. I just know we don't call the people who live in, you know, the Northwest and up there in the Yukon and Nunavut, we don't call them Eskimos. So maybe it is an offensive term. I read the piece in the Ottawa Citizen and I didn't really get much from it, aside from the fact that it felt more like a newspaper in the opposing city of the team Edmonton was playing in the Grey Cup trying to drum up controversy. Aside from that, I really didn't get much information out of it. I just thought it was kind of dumb.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, if there's someone out there that can explain to us better why it's an offensive word, then, you know, I'm all ears. I'll listen to their points and everything. So, but I don't see why it's offensive. Maybe I'm just ignorant, but yeah, I don't get it.
All right, so let's move on from this kind of touchy subject and into something that's a little less touchy. Our last little piece of CFL news before we get into the ending questions here. These CFL obviously handed out their awards Thursday, I believe it was, before the Grey Cup. And I got to say, you know, Henry Burris won MOP. I think we all recognized that was going to happen. Congratulations to our very own Brandon Speedy B. Banks, who won Most Outstanding Special Teams Player. Good for him. Well-deserved award, I think. Darrell Walker was Rookie of the Year, which I think surprised nobody. These awards were pretty cut and dry. There's really only two to me that were really up for grabs. That would have been Defensive Player of the Year, between Simone Lawrence and Adam Big Hill, and the voters took Big Hill. I voted for Simone. I believe you said you would have voted for Simone as well, but I understand why they picked Big Hill.
Yes, so do I. I actually said that I took Big Hill.
Oh, did you? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you did.
Yeah, so, yeah, you know, I think Lawrence had a great year, and we talked about it before. He's a playmaker. He's a great player on defense. Yeah, but, you know, I said Big Hill will probably win, but I could have went either way with it. I think they're both great players, and they're both deserving of winning the award. So, you know, it wasn't a big shock. And like I said, it could have went either way. So, you know, I don't have a huge problem with it.
There is one that I did have a bit of a problem with, and that was Most Outstanding Canadian. And this is not in any way meant to demean or play down how well Brad Sinopoli was in Ottawa this year, but I think Jamal Westerman should have won that award. He was a difference maker for Winnipeg on defense. He was their best defensive player, period. And quite frankly, on a defensive line in Winnipeg that was not very good, teams should have been game planning and did game plan to try to stop him, and they just couldn't. He had 17 sacks in 17 games. He had multi-sack games. He had as many multi-sack games as he had games with zero sacks. He was a constant getting pressure in the backfield and taking the quarterback down. Sinopoli was, what would you say, maybe the third option in Ottawa's offense behind. Chris Williams was the number one option, obviously. Ernest Jackson was maybe the number two option, and Greg Ellingson sort of brought himself into the conversation at the tail end of the season. But it was really, Sinopoli was kind of, he was a release valve of sorts, but he wasn't a guy that teams went into games going, we have to make sure Brad Sinopoli doesn't catch the ball. And to me, that's sort of the definition of outstanding. If you're a player who teams go into games going, we have to stop this guy, you should beat out a guy just because the numbers were there. He had over 1,000 yards, but he only had like 3 TDs. It's not a ton. And for him to win Most Outstanding Canadian, I think this just shows that the awards are tilted in favor of offensive players, and I'm not really happy about that.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, they probably lean towards the offensive player because it's more, I don't know, flashy position. I agree. Westerman was incredible all season long. He came in, signed with the Bombers in the offseason, came in and just dominated. Sinopoli had a great season, not taking anything away from him. I think he's maybe the best Canadian receiver in the league right now. But Westerman was such a difference maker. I'd have to pick him, and maybe they lean towards, you know, Ottawa, winning team, Winnipeg, not so much. Maybe that was part of the decision too. So, but we're not talking about we're talking about individual awards. So if I had a vote, I would have went with Westerman for sure, because he's just such a dominant player at that position.
He had 17 sacks, like I mentioned. The next highest player on Winnipeg had 5. So he was head and shoulders the best pass rusher on that team, and he finished 2nd in the league in sacks. And I know over the last few years, sacks have been not as highly regarded as they used to be. Sacks, he's got a bunch of sacks, he must be a great player. They sort of incorporate quarterback pressures into that as well, and all these other sorts of advanced stats, which I understand but don't really understand. I'm not a stats guy all that much. I just watched the games, and I saw Westerman dominate almost every game I watched him play. And I watched Sinopoli, and as good as he was and as important as he was to Ottawa's offense, he wasn't the number one option. I don't like that Westerman didn't get credit for this amazing year. You had talked in the past about how guys come up from the NFL, and they tend to dog it a little bit. He did not. Just balled out, like to use that phrase. Like he was one of the lone bright spots on what was a very bad Winnipeg team. And I think if the poor team play by Winnipeg influenced that vote in any way, is unfortunate. But I also was told that apparently some voters took into account that Westerman isn't a quote unquote real Canadian. And if you want to talk about things that are offensive, for a country that claims to be as inclusive as we are, for anyone out there to vote for a guy and say, well, I'm not voting for him because he's not a real Canadian, to me, that's disgusting.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, he's under the rule, he's a national player or whatever you want to call it. He's a Canadian. So, yeah, I don't get that. If he's considered a Canadian by the rule, then you can't make those, you know, judgment decisions saying he's not a real Canadian. That's just ridiculous.
Well, wasn't Ben Cahoon born in the U.S.?
Yeah.
And he won, what, back-to-back Most Outstanding Canadians 10 or so years ago. And no one said, oh, well, he doesn't deserve because he's not a real – like, this is just – he was up for the award. You vote for it based on merit, not for some idiotic reasoning that you've contrived in your head. And as far as I'm concerned, I wish these votes were made public, because anyone who voted against Westerman because of his not real Canadian-ness, to me, should have their vote taken away from them.
Yeah, it's just a dumb thing to look at it like that. It's just unnecessary.
You ready to get in some questions then?
Yeah.
All right, so they all came to me again this week, so you get to answer the questions first. All right. We're going to start with one that I guess I sort of have to answer since it's about the actual show. So we were asked, what is our podcast schedule going to be in the off season? I decided to do a little bit of looking. Last year, we did 8 shows between January and basically the start of the season. I would say 8 to 10 shows is probably pretty close to what we'll do this off season. We tend to get together when there's something to discuss. And this is going to be the last show for the year. But yeah, we'll probably do, I think we're going to try to get together, what would you say, maybe every 3 weeks or so. We're going to get together whenever news warrants, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Now, the difference is this year, we are going to try to bring in a little bit of a different flavor in the off season. We're going to try to get some guests in here. We've got a couple lined up. One I would say is a pretty big get, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I don't want to say anything now. I don't want to jinx it, but I think everyone out there listening will be very interested in a conversation Mike and I, or Mike or I, whichever one of us or both of us end up doing it, is going to have with someone. But we're also trying to get some other people in here. I'm putting this call out right now. If you're a Ticats fan or a CFL fan and you want to come on the show in the winter months here from, say, January until April or May, you just want to talk some CFL, you want to get your story out there, you want to share your experiences, I am open to bringing you on. I do this show, Mike and I do the show for fun. And if there's people out there that want to be heard, want to get their opinions out there, I would be happy to have you on the show. Reach out to me on Twitter. Reach out to Mike on Twitter. However you want to get involved. If you want to be on the show this offseason, let me know, and we'll see if we can work something out.
I'd love to hear the stories of other Ticat fans.
Yeah, same here. So now that that's out of the way, let's get into some actual questions that people have asked. So we have a regular contributor to our show, Adam, who brought in some questions on the 3 Down Nation comment section. And he's got 3 here, so let's get on with the first one. He asked, should the Ticats let Eric Harris walk, move Butler to Sam linebacker, and then Daly to free safety? This would allow them to save money on a free agent and keep 3 Canadian starters on defense, even if Laurent and Stevens sign elsewhere. The big downside is the number of sub-packages Steinhauer has used in the past where he substituted a DB for Harris. So what do you think? Should the Ticats let Eric Harris move on to greener pastures and bring Butler down to linebacker and then start Mike Daly?
I'm a fan of Harris. I think he's a really good player, but we're not going to sign every free agent. So, you know, I like that idea. You know, Butler has had experience at linebacker when he played for Saskatchewan. He did a really good job at that position. So, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I think Daly's an up and comer. You know, he came in for for Butler this season, and they didn't miss a beat. You know, he made a lot of big plays. He had some interceptions in there. He just did a great job filling in for him. So, yeah, I think that's a real option. You know, there, like he said, it helps with the ratios, and I don't think we'd miss a beat with those two guys. You know, Daly coming in safety and Butler moving to linebacker. Now, I don't know if Butler wants to move his position or not. I don't know if he wants to play linebacker again, but I personally wouldn't have a problem with that decision, because I think they're both great players, and I think that getting them on the field at the same time would be a good thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with the move. I just don't think Eric Harris is going to sign anywhere. I don't think he's going to command a huge salary. He's a good player, really good player. He's made a bunch of plays for this defense over the last few years. But his stats aren't exactly where you would hand them out to other teams and go, look at what he's done on the stat sheet. And I think Harris is going to get re-signed simply because I think he's going to be a not very costly move for the team. Now, if he doesn't, if he proves to be too expensive, or if the Ticats decide to move in this direction, I wouldn't have a problem with either. I think Butler can play linebacker. I think he can be just as effective as Harris. And I said last week that Mike Daly was my breakout Canadian from 2015. I would love to see him on the field more. So if this gets him on the field more, I would absolutely be in favor of it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just like I said, he came in and they didn't miss a beat with Butler out and Daly coming in. So he's a great player too, and I'd love to see him on the field more as well.
Next question is, the team, the Ticats he means, has 8 free agent DBs. After Courtney Steven and Emmanuel Davis, who would be your top priorities to re-sign? Now, if you want a list of all the team's free agents, you can find it on 3 Down Nation. It's been up there for a few weeks. I'm not going to list all 8 guys, but who after those two are you looking at as guys the team should make an attempt to bring back?
Well, I'm looking at Johnny Sears Jr. You know, when he was in there, he made such a great impact on the team. He had, you know, those picks early in the season, and he's just a really good player. I'd like to see him back, and I'd like to see them bring back Jaleel Carter, because, you know, he came in late in the season, didn't make much of an impact, but I think that if they signed him up and he had a training camp with the team and really got accustomed to the defense, he could be an impact player as well. So those are the two guys besides the players you listed that I'd bring back.
Well, Johnny Sears, I think, is almost a no-brainer. He had one of the best debut games I think I've seen from a Ticat in I don't know how long. He had, what, I think it was 2 interceptions and a sack in the first week against Calgary. And he returned one for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So he was magnificent when he was on the field, and that injury really hurt that secondary. There are 2 other guys that I would like to see them bring back. One is Brandon Stewart. I know he's not considered a favorite amongst Ticat fans, but I thought he played really well at DB late in the season when he was thrust into a starting role. And I think his contributions on special teams really helped this team. Though, if I'm being completely honest, I don't think he will be back, but I would like to see him back, even on a shorter, like a 2-year deal, you know, not for much money. But I think he has a spot on this team to contribute. And another player is Mike Edom. I would like to see, he hasn't shown much in his time, except for his rookie season in Montreal. They acquired him in that trade at the deadline. I'd like to see more of what he can do. Again, another guy who was great on special teams, and he's a Canadian. You can never have too many Canadians who could play on defense in a pinch. So Mike Edom is another guy after the big two that I would like to see brought back.
Yeah, he's rookie of the year in his first year. He has a lot of potential still. So yeah, like Brandon Stewart would be a great depth guy to have back, and Edom as well. So, you know, he could be a starter again in this league, and you're right. I'd like to see him back as well.
Well, and what happens if the team does lose Courtney Steven? Maybe that pushes them to sign Edom a lot faster. Yeah. But you never know what's going to happen. Free agency is a few months away, and anything can happen between now and then. So who knows who's back? But it's like we said probably 2 or 3 times already. It's going to be one hell of an offseason. Last one from Adam, and he asks, of the 3 free agent offensive tackles, who is your top priority to re-sign? Now, these 3 I do know. It's Jake Olsen, Joel Figueroa, and Jeremy Lewis. So who are your 3 guys that you want to see back? Like, which one of those 3? I'm sorry, that was my mistake.
I'm a big fan of Figueroa. I know he's had his injury troubles, but I think when he's in there, he's one of the best in the league. And Jake Olsen as well. I think he's done a really good job. So those would be my 2.
My number 1 is Olsen, but all these guys come with caveats. And Olsen's going to be coming off a major knee injury. Figueroa, for some reason, just can't seem to stay healthy. He's been hurt a lot in his time with Hamilton, but he's such a big player. Like, he's a huge human being. So a guy like that at a tackle position is hard to pass up. And Lewis, I actually liked when he saw some playing time this year. He didn't stand out in any way, but I don't think he stood out either positively or negatively. So he's a guy that maybe another year could develop into something special. But if my number one guy, I think, is Olsen. I think I wasn't as high on him last season when he was here as I became this season. He really turned into a very good player who unfortunately suffered a knee injury, if I'm not mistaken, the same week Calero suffered his.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure they both went out the same week.
Yeah.
And he was turning into a really good offensive tackle. So he's the guy that I want to see bring back.
Like we talked about, you know, the injury troubles, but they're all good players. So I like to see them back as well.
All right. So next we have a few questions from Bill in Burlington. His first one is, are there non-Ticat free agents the team should go after as soon as free agency starts, regardless of their starting roster for next year? Who's currently scheduled to be a free agent that you want to see the Ticats go after?
Well, I'm looking at the D-line because there's such high expectations at the start of the season. You know, we figured that that was one of their strong suits, but they just didn't seem to. They were near the bottom of the league in sacks, and I know that, you know, sacks is sometimes overemphasized as an important stat, but there wasn't a ton of pressure all season long, and I think that they underperformed. So I'm getting some, I'm bringing some defensive linemen in here to push Hickman, and you know, I know that Hickman's a free agent, but if he resigns, you know, Ed Norwood unfortunately had that season-ending injury, and we don't know if he's going to be back. But I'm bringing in some D linemen. You know, maybe I know John Bowman's old. Well, not old, but he's getting up there in age. But, you know, he led the league in sacks. And, you know, maybe try to bring him in on a one-year contract. You know, maybe get Okapalugo. I know he didn't have a strong season this year, but he had a really good one the year before that. So I'm just looking at the D-line, trying to get some more competition, you know, trying to get the sacks up, trying to get the pressure up when we just send four people, you know, off the end. So my main priority is defensive line this offseason for finding free agents from other teams.
I'm kind of all over the place with guys they should look at because who knows who's coming back. Aaron Grimes had a magnificent season for Edmonton this year. He's a guy they could go after. There's some receiver help out there, especially Canadians. A Rob Bagg, a veteran guy who maybe is nearing the end of his career but wouldn't mind a last run with a championship-caliber team. Maybe he comes in on a 1 or 2 year deal, especially if Andy Fantuz decides to go elsewhere. You bring in Bag, you still keep those two Canadians. But you got a what the hell is that? You got a hairball? Oh my god, are you turning into a cat?
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, Rob Bag is a guy. You know what? Oh man, you threw me off. What the hell? Shamad Chambers, you know, to hell with Rob Bagg. Maybe he comes. Anyway, Shamad Chambers, again, a guy who most valuable Canadian, I mean, in the Grey Cup. Maybe he's a guy that's finally ready to turn the corner. Maybe a reunion with Sam Giguere. He didn't have the best season in Montreal, and maybe he'd rather play there than return to Hamilton. But again, there's a guy who could make some noise in a receiving corps here. So I looked there, but, you know, Corey Greenwood in Toronto at a linebacker position. If Taylor Reed leaves and we lose some Canadians, maybe you bring in a guy like Greenwood, a guy that no one seems to like except if he plays for your team, Cleon Lang, probably the number two defensive tackle free agent after Ted Laurent. You lose out Laurent, maybe you bring Lang in to replace him. Winston Venable in Montreal is a linebacker who I kind of suspect will re-sign with the Owls. They're really good at re-signing their own players. So I would expect him to probably return to Montreal. But if he's out there, maybe that's the guy you kick the tires on. Say the team loses Justin Medlock. Maybe they go down the road and try to entice Swayze Waters to come play in Hamilton. He, aside from those missed field goals in the East semifinal, has been really good playing in Tim Hortons Field. The Labor Day Classic in 2014, he had those two beautiful coffin corner punts that buried the Ticats at the 1 yard line. Mm-hmm. Incredible. And the Ticats might be in the need of some quarterbacking help, and I know he spent the year injured, and I know people are going to just say, I only want him back here because of how much I like him. What about Dan Lefevre? People were clamoring for a veteran backup to Zach Collaros most of the season. They wanted to bring in Kevin Glenn. If Kevin Glenn's staying in Montreal, he's going to be the starter. They have a ton of young quarterbacks there, so I doubt Lefevre is going to be re-signed in Montreal. If he tries to make a comeback, why not come back to Hamilton? If he comes in, he'll probably get to start a few games at the beginning of the season if Collaros isn't healthy. Maybe someone like that. There's a lot of guys out there. There's a lot of uncertainty as we sit here in December waiting to see what's going to happen in February. And I just threw a lot of names out there, but those are some of the guys that I initially looked at when I looked at the list and tried to write down some guys. Those are the guys that I sort of focused in on. I'm all over the place because, again, I don't know what's going to happen with this team.
So tough to think about right now. But, you know, and then you got Ricky Foley and Chad Owens. I mean, they could be Tie Cats next year.
You shut your mouth.
No, just joking. I wouldn't want that either. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's tough because there's so many free agents this year. We've talked about it before. It's just crazy. I'm looking at the list right now. It's just the number of free agents on each team is just crazy. So I think we need help on the defensive line. And, you know, depending on who leaves and who stays, we could need a lot of help if, you know, there's a mass exodus. But like we said many times before, it's going to be an interesting offseason because there's just so many free agents out there.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to February, honestly, and what's coming up in between then to see who goes where, who signs, maybe who's traded. It's all up in the air, and that's exciting for me because the CFL offseason can be a bit slow at times. I don't think we're going to see a lot of slow spots this year. I think this is going to be really, really interesting, and I'm looking forward to it. So Bill has another question, and he asks, in terms of potential trades this offseason, would the Ticats generally prefer to trade with Western teams versus Eastern teams to avoid making their Eastern rivals better? I think that's an interesting question.
I'd have to say yes. You know, if possible, you don't really want to trade within your division. I know it's a small league and every team sees each other, you know, twice or three times. But, you know, you want to, if you can make deals with the Western teams, you're going to do that first. But if there's, you know, if there's an interesting deal on the table, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they will trade within their division. So, yeah, they prefer to do it east to west, I think. But if there's an opportunity that can't be passed up, they'll trade within the division.
Hey, one of the biggest trades this team has made in the last 10 years was getting a player from Toronto when they got Arlan Bruce.
Yeah.
So I think teams might be hesitant to trade within their division. But I also think that each team thinks, well, we're going to get the better guy anyway. And we're going to be able to coach them up. So I don't care who I trade with. We're going to win this trade regardless. But you do tend to see more trades across the country than you do within the division. But I think, yeah, just if Ken Austin's bringing a guy in a trade or getting rid of a guy, he either thinks the guy he's getting rid of just won't fit his system and isn't good enough. And the guy he's bringing in, he thinks he's going to turn into a star anyway. So I think Austin is confident no matter who he trades with.
Yeah, for sure. You know, he's a very smart football mind, and he's going to, you know, you've seen him take players from that were cast off from Toronto and make them stars on the team. So he's going to get the best deal that he can, for sure.
Terrell Sinkfield's a perfect example of what you just said.
Yeah, exactly.
You're one of your favorite players.
Yes.
Final question, and this one is, I think, a bit near and dear to your heart as a guy who lived out on the island for a few years before a recent move to the now, once again, City of Champions. Yep. So Bill's last question is, will Halifax or Moncton or another eastern city ever get a CFL team? Is this on the long-range radar?
Well, it's been on the long-range radar for about 35 years. I mean, I've always wanted it to happen. I think it would be great. I think that if the team was put there, the people would get behind it. You know, there's not a lot of pro sports out there, if any. You know, they got the National Basketball League of Canada or whatever. That's, you know, that's a pro league, but it's not, you know, that popular. So, but no, I don't think they'll ever get a team. I don't think the people, the politicians will ever get behind, or the people will ever get behind building a suitable stadium. It's just not going to happen. They've had so many years to do it. They never will. You know, they're talking about it this year. The mayor of Halifax went to a game in Ottawa last season to check out, I'm assuming to talk with Jeff Hunt and the ownership group, see how they made it work. You know, he was there firsthand. He saw, you know, the success story in Ottawa. And then they were voting on building a stadium, and they vote to build a 10,000-seat stadium, which just isn't enough. So, you know, they've had their chances. It's just not going to happen. It's never going to happen. It's not going to happen in our lifetimes. There's never going to be a team out there. So we should just give up on the idea.
It really does seem like it's never going to happen. This 10,000-seat stadium thing that you bring up seems to be kind of the death blow to it ever happening at any point soon. It's unfortunate. I was out there for Touchdown Atlantic, and it wasn't, I would say, a roaring success with the people there. You would know much better than I would how, and I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, the CFL attitude out there isn't all that. There's not this appetite for Canadian football as there is for the NFL version, unfortunately. Yeah, I defer to you on this. You were out there for so long that you would have your pulse on it better than I would. I hope it happens. I really, really do. It just gives me another excuse to be able to go to a road game out in a part of the country that I love. When I was out there for TD Atlantic in 2011, I fell in love with that out there. PEI, Moncton, just all of it was just amazing. It's a beautiful place. I'm with you though. I don't ever see it happening. I think if they expand, I think Quebec City is probably more likely. There's a healthy football appetite there, especially with the Laval program doing so well. They just had the Vanier Cup there. Yeah, I think maybe until we hear word about an ownership group stepping up or someone being out there interested in bringing a team in, maybe we should just let this one die for the time being.
You know, I'm the biggest fan of that idea. You know, I think it'd be great. I think there's not many fans out there because they feel left out. There's no team in their area, and I think that it would truly make the CFL a coast-to-coast league, and I think it would be fantastic, but it just doesn't seem to be an idea that the cities can get behind or people can get behind. You know, it's like, oh yeah, we'd be fans if it came there, but we're not going to make a huge effort to get it. So yeah, I don't see it happening. I'm not sure if Quebec City will ever happen either. You know, they got the Rouge Or and they got their stadium there. That's pretty big. I think it's around 15,000, and they don't seem to have, there's not a big push for the CFL there either. They seem to be happy with the Rouge Or, and they're really gung-ho about getting their NHL team back, which I understand. You know, they have a passion for hockey there, obviously, just like the rest of the country. But yeah, I see this league being 9 teams for the rest of our lifetimes. I don't see any expansion coming at any point.
Yeah, I gotta side with you. Let's focus on getting these 9 teams healthy and profitable before we start worrying about where else to go. Ottawa is obviously the model for success. Mm-hmm. That teams will try to, any expansion team that ever comes out in the next 100 years will try to emulate, but I don't know if you can. That's a different market right now, and they were successful really early. I don't know if that fan base would have been as fervent as they were this year if the team had struggled again, but you never know. But let's focus on we've outlined there's problems in BC, there's small problems in Winnipeg. Toronto is still a question mark, although it looks to be trending in the right direction, but we won't know until they finally get into BMO. Yes, Ottawa's great. Hamilton looks to have finally turned the corner. You mentioned Saskatchewan's always pretty good. Edmonton, well, Calgary even had, and Edmonton to a certain extent, they had problems selling tickets to their playoff games. I know that Edmonton's, the West Final in Edmonton was more well attended than any other playoff game this season. I think it was even more well attended than the Grey Cup, but that stadium holds 55,000-60,000 people, I think, and there was what, maybe 35 there. That's a great turnout, but not what you would expect. Like, I was hoping, and I believe I even predicted way back that they would get 45,000-50,000 people there. So that's got to be a disappointment too. And Calgary didn't sell out their playoff game. And I know the semifinals, we talked about this previously, are difficult sells because it's not the most important playoff game of the season. But there still are problems areas in this league getting fans to get to games and watch games for the teams that already exist. And I think it's premature to start talking about expansion right now. I think we got to just – let's get the league to a good place again where it was – where it looked like it was going and it's starting to trend in certain areas that way. Let's get everyone healthy now. Then we can worry about going somewhere else.
Yeah, I got to agree that I agree with all that, and I think that 34,000 was a great crowd in Edmonton, and I was there. You know, they were loud and proud, and it was awesome. But I forget. I saw it on Twitter that they sold over 40,000 tickets like a week before, and I was like, "Oh, that's pretty awesome." And then I see that, you know, a couple days before the game, the S released a statement on Twitter saying they've sold 29,000. So I don't know where I got that information, but maybe I imagined it. I don't know. But yeah, I was expecting more. You know, it was a beautiful day here in Edmonton. It was, you know, it was perfect football weather. I think that 40,000 should have been obtained, and it wasn't. You know, like I said, it was a great crowd, but I think it could have been more, and I think it would have been more in the past. So maybe there's, you know, I think the Eskimos are coming back strong here. They just won the Grey Cup, but yeah, it could have been better, the West Final. I expected more.
Yeah, it's a slight disappointment, but as Ticat fans, I'm happy that the Ticats are, again, contenders. They are finally a profitable team. They made money this year.
Yeah, that's
just, that's huge. That's huge.
Yeah. For many years, it's really tough being a fan when you don't know from year to year if the team's still going to be around. You know, it's, you know, if the Ticats went away, you know, that would be, you know, that would be terrible. And yeah, I'm really, you know, Bob Young came in and he really turned this franchise around. It took a long time, but you know, they got their stadium and they're making money now, which is just, it's just awesome, because for years and years and years and years, it just wasn't that way.
Yeah, so I can't be too complainy. I want to see things change. I want to see this league better. I want to see the on-field product better. I want to see the officiating better. And I want to see all these teams making money. And I want to see this league grow to where I think it can be. But for the time being, we have to just take these little victories and hope that there's small. It's not going to be a huge jump. We got to take these incremental steps. And if we can finally have a Hamilton franchise that for 40 years has been one of the anchors weighing this league down, if they can turn it around, I have confidence that the other cities can turn it around. And I just kind of wanted to end this on a positive note. We got a little negative at the end there. It's our last show of the year, so I wanted to end this on a positive thing. And there's my positive note. This is still the Canadian Football League. We're going to be back next season. We're going to be back next year talking about this. We love this league. This is our league. Whether the people at the CFL want to get rid of that slogan or not, I'm still going to use it. And hey, you know what, man? This has been a fun year. I'm glad you agreed to do this with me, and I can't wait for next season.
Yeah, same here. And I just want to say that I think that next year is going to be, you know, we saw a lot of improvements in the game this year. You know, I know the flags were a problem, a big problem. But, you know, you look at the stats, a whole bunch more 1,000-yard receivers. You know, the passing yards were up. The offensive production was up. So I think next year the flags are going to be down and we're going to see a really great product on the field. Hopefully we can keep the starting quarterbacks healthy. And I think that it could be a really entertaining year next year.
All right. So on that note, I'm going to say listen after the show when we do our little outro here. There's going to be a little highlight package that you guys can listen to some of the what I believe were the top moments of the Ticat season. I hope you enjoy it. It's only going to be on this episode. It's like 5 or so minutes long. Don't worry. I'm not going to do it every week. Just this week, give it a little listen, get yourself maybe pumped up, or maybe keep it and get yourself pumped up for next season when it happens. I had fun doing it, so hopefully you guys enjoy it. But like I said, this is our last show of the year. We are going to take a little bit of a break, and I would say probably reconvene sometime in early January to talk about all the things that happened in December and maybe share some Christmas stories that you and I have. So for Podski Weeby this week, for this season, and for this year, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Will score. Touchdown, Hamilton. I put on for my city. On for my city.
Answered by Luke Tasker. Yeah, players onside. Will coach kick? So this can be recovered by the tie catch. Some life in the Ticats here in the final minute, third quarter. Ticats got it, trying to keep the drive alive here, second and eight. And throwing wide open receiver. And it's going to be an easy touchdown to Perry Grant. Game on. From 47 yards out. Shot here!